Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right. Hey, what's going on? That thing I doers, that thing I dudes, that thing I dudettes, that thing I don'ts. I don't know. All the
We miss you during the week when we're not with you.
I hope you enjoyed the last week's episode with Josh Groban. That was fun. It's fun that he's with us. But I think we have somebody we have all these really, really talented dudes who are all like...
Seriously.
I know I talk a lot, but I've been trying to stay out of the way and just let them talk because today we have Ryan Tedder. I'm curious, Esty, I think I follow what's going on in music a lot because I do it like proactively.
Yes.
Yes. Like you were aware of, like before being in the music industry, like of Ryan's like... cultural musical ubiquity in the scene, right?
Yes,
like
absolutely.
Because a lot of people have to explain, and I'm always shocked that they don't know that he has done as much
so
as he
much.
Has done.
So yeah. much. I mean, my introduction to Ryan was, I think like most people was with Apologize with Timbaland, mm-hmm. and seeing that video and also hearing that song. I mean, it's like an undeniable, beautiful song. And then just through the years, like, I feel like, you know, after that, it was like every year it was like he had like the five number one songs of that year. He'd written those songs.
Yeah, he definitely checks all the boxes. I think I've talked a lot about Anthony Newley on this show, who's one of my guys who Anthony Newley and Mel Torme and all these multi-hyphenates that were famous for one thing. So Anthony Newley, who wrote and directed and starred in his own shows, but he also wrote like Goldfinger and he wrote
right.
Pure Imagination and he wrote Feeling Good and all these songs. And Ryan is one of these guys because he's had it for, and I'm saying this sort of as exposition for anybody who doesn't know who Ryan is listening to this podcast, because I just assume everybody knows everybody in the entertainment industry. But obviously Ryan's lead singer, frontman, songwriter, band leader of One Republic, and they have a lot of hits, but he's also a prolific songwriter, producer. I just don't, there's not enough time to go, just Wikipedia him. I mean, they'll do a better yeah. job, but of course, Beyonce, Adele, you know, Demi Lovato, I'm forgetting
Taylor
so
Swift.
Many people, Taylor Swift, there's just so many. He's had so many massive songs, and there are so many songs that people listening to this podcast probably don't even realize
that he wrote
are Ryan Tedder's songs, but I wasn't aware of just how eclectic his background was. He told some pretty amazing stories and just the value of being of the hustle and being shrewd and just he said so many things
yeah.
that I was so moved and
I'm
really, really honestly inspired by. Yeah. Our mouths were
yeah,
like,
the entire time. The entire time. Like the stories that he told on this podcast
and he has a
were
tie-in
incredible.
With He's got a tie-in with Lance Bass, one of our previous guests. He tells a great story about Matthew Morrison, my old castmate on Glee.
The world is so tiny. It's so nuts.
It's
crazy so
small. Just how much.
It's yeah. so small. We're all so connected. It really is 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah. We got to get Kevin on the show. But instead, we have
Ryan
Tedder. Ryan
Tedder. Let's get into it.
I know we've all flown internationally, and we see those like ads for all the high-end fragrances.
Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp's. I always call yep. Johnny Depp sausage. You always see his sausage and him just being in the I don't know Joshua Tree with big hats, big scarves.
Yeah, that international terminal at LAX. Always.
Can I pitch you guys my idea for if I ever scored one of those? This is my deck for my pitch deck for what I would want to do in one of those high end videos.
Yes, shoot.
So you guys can think of the name. It'll be some sexy kind of bastardization of a slightly foreign word. It'll be me waiting in line at the international terminal of a crowded airport.
Okay.
That's the theme. That's the aesthetic.
Okay.
Love that.
I'm
love that
it.
For you.
And that's all it is, because those are the only places that I see those ads.
Okay. Yes.
And so I would like to reflect I would like the art to imitate life in those moments.
And the only place, like, to be totally candid in terms of international travel, like in a non-pandemic year, I do way, way, way too much. The only place that I try on colognes or fragrances that I don't wear, that I don't own, that I don't wear, is the international terminal of fill-in-the-blank airport, Singapore, Paris, London.
Some cool place. Yes.
I'm like, I don't know if you guys do this. I do one fragrance on one arm, one fragrance on the other arm, and then I might even do a different one on the neck.
Yeah.
Really?
You ABC it.
I ABC it.
You cross streams? Doesn't that kind of, don't they fight each other?
No.
Well, what happens is I walk around the airport, figure out which one I actually like, then I go to the bathroom and I wipe off. It's so lame. I wipe off the other one because one time I did that and I sat down on like a 11-hour long haul flight to like Zurich. And I heard the lady next to me say, someone is wearing the most confusing fragrance.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. They fight each other. You can't cross those things. You got to get them off.
Yeah. I picked the good one and then I wipe the rest off. And then every time I get home, my wife is like, you're not switching colognes. Why do you keep doing this? Stop. Stick with what works. Stick with what works.
Well, because what else are we supposed to fucking do when you have like a 10-hour layover somewhere?
You know what we do? We go into Hermes and pretend we're going to buy something.
I know. I look around. I touch the scarves.
That's some of the most prolific acting I've ever done, is going into those stores and really, really selling to them that I give a shit.
And they're on you.
Actually might buy. Yeah, they're so excited.
Yeah, they're like, on you. Man. Yep. Yep,
this is the day that I buy a fucking $4,000 fucking wallet on my way to another country where it cost me that much to get there.
Yep,
but
exactly.
That's the place to do it. But I feel like I walk in there and it's like they already know. It's like a very pretty woman situation for me when I go into those stores.
Well, I'm dressed usually, you know, dressing, and I would say just overall. I would say outfit culture and clothing culture has devolved so tremendously in the past 5 or 6 years. So now, especially when you do it for a living and you travel, I used to dress up to travel. I dress nice, not like up, but I dress nice. Now, I mean, I'm wearing sweatpants. I've got the hoodie. I look like a college kid.
PJs.
Yeah, PJs. I look like I'm going to go to a youth hostel. And so when I walk into the Moncler store, they're up on my shit, not because they think I'm going to buy. They think I'm not buying, I'm there to take.
I do think that I'm noticing those brands are shifting, are like catching up with us, where it's like these places that once were very, they just had different kind of things. Now I'm seeing those brands having the hoodies, having the sweatpants, because they know that it's like
comfort
you.
Is king.
Yeah, comfort is king. That's the way to go. I love that we led this with travel, because we do travel a lot, and I think Ryan, you have probably more points on the board than Esty and I. But that's saying a lot, because we're kind of a traveling bandwagon here.
Well, it's funny. I actually went to, just speaking of traveling, I went to the Hall & Oates concert the other night. I swear I'm going to bring this home. Follow me on this journey.
Okay, staying with you.
Yep.
So I see Hall & Oates. Amazing concert. Brilliant concert.
In Los Angeles?
Hollywood Bowl.
Hollywood Bowl.
And then I go to sleep that night, and all the songs are just kind of swirling in my head. Like, you kind of forget, or maybe you don't forget, how many hits Hall & Oates has. And in my dream, I was getting up to accept an award from, like, the Travel Commission of Jamaica.
Okay, I'm staying with you. Staying with you.
Because I had taken the Hall & Oates song, You Make My Dreams Come True, and made it into a reggae song, and made it, in Jamaica my dreams come true, ooh, do, do. And they were, it like won awards.
That's amazing.
And Daryl Hall and John Oates were there to accept it was like the Grammys.
This is so specific. Really appreciate your subconscious's like attention to detail.
I was like, I must have been like, I mean, talk about like a marketing brain. Like, I think about those things all the time. Like, okay, if I was going to do, like you were talking about doing like a fragrance, your own fragrance brand. I think about jingles. I think about jingles all the time.
I'm in the middle of doing a jingle right now, actually.
You are? Like, wait, literally today, hold on.
I have to deliver the
let's
jingle.
Let's unpack that box. Save us from ourselves, Ryan Tedder.
Okay.
We're, you know, we're going off on our own tangents here.
I can help you.
Your tangent is amazing because, one, John Oates is actually a friend of mine. When I moved back to Colorado for 8 years, after like my career took off, we sojourned back to Denver for 8 years. And I got to know, I was like, when you live in Colorado, you end up meeting every other well-known artist that lives in that state.
Right.
So like The Fray and like 303 and The Lumineers and then John Oates. And I ended up actually going to his studio in Aspen and I did one of the songs on his last album just because we became friends. Tying it together to the jingle, I am redesigning the entire sound and mnemonic, like everything of Hertz, like the rental car company.
No way.
I have to deliver that today. I gave them the first draft on Friday and I have to like touch it up and then give them a new thing for this big
just
campaign.
The sound for their like there's a word for it and I should know it because my best friend from
it's
college
like
does
audio
this for
branding isn't it is it
mnemonic
yeah
mnemonic
so
branding
it's called mnemonic
Mnemonic.
Mnemonic
it's
branding.
A mnemonic, yeah.
Yes.
So like I did an entire original song, not really with so much with that many lyrics. They have a campaign phrase. And I had to redo, do a brand new song, which it's funny. Jingles are not my day job, but in the last 2 weeks, I did Fiat Worldwide, their campaign for the new electric car, and now I'm doing Hertz, which is just through random friends who, whatever. And
how cool.
The mnemonic thing is interesting because I have to, you know, the McDonald's da 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 da. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, dude, yeah. Yes. I'm waiting for my. Yeah, keep going. I have a whole thing on the cook. Yeah.
So my challenge is deeper in that I had to do an original song that just felt like new and edgy and cool, like stuff I'm producing for other artists right now, like on the wave of what's coming. In quotes,
right? Sure.
But then I have to bury the simple Hertz mnemonic within the song, so there has to be an overarching melody that like da 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 da, you know, something like that that just becomes the theme so they can play it separately from the actual song.
Man, there's a
quite
whole
the
lot
task
to unpack here.
There's a lot. I mean,
this
yeah,
is something we've never really talked about on the show because we talked
do
about
you like
yeah
I wonder do you like doing that. That's it. Sounds like a lot of fun.
That's what I know,
I yeah. love it. I love it. So my degree is actually in advertising and marketing. And so like
shut up. Get out of here.
Yeah, so that's my degree.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
Skill
so
sets.
Before One Republic took off, before I had written any hits for anybody else, I discovered TV and film licensing through my old manager, 2004, 2005. And I was broke. I was negative $50,000 wealthy. I was getting evicted. I was jumping on PA gigs on television commercials and music videos for $200 a day. And all of a sudden, I get introduced to a music supervisor who says, hey, I'm directing this movie, or my friend's directing this movie. His name is Buck Damon. His friend, who's now Darren and I's long-term mutual friend, Adam Shankman.
That's how we met. That was
that's how
our,
we met.
Our little meet cute.
Our entree.
Yes.
Other than Maggiano's, which I'm pretty sure I saw you perform at. But but Adam's directing like Cheaper by the Dozen, whatever it was.
Okay.
Cheaper by the Dozen 2. We're missing a song for one scene. It is 15 seconds. We need an original song that sounds kind of like this other song. Do you think you could come up with it? I was at the Grove having dinner on credit. And I get the call and I'm like thinking in my mind, I'm going to make at least $500. Like there's no way they can't pay me at least $500 to do this. And I go, do you mind me asking the budget? And they go, well, we're sorry. We're kind of low on this film. We're running out of money, but we could probably get you $20,000. And I was like,
yeah, you vomit immediately.
It's like I dropped the food. I stood up. I told my fiance at the time, love you. I'm out. Went home, did the song, and that's what got me into jingles and songwriting and TV and film. And now for me, it's a fun side business that is, there's no pressure. So I get to do it. I'm not worried. Is it going to go number one? I just get to do it. So if it's Dr. Pepper or if it's Hertz or FIFA, like I'm always there for it. And it's fun.
You know, what's really interesting about this story is that you really start to, I think for every artist, but we'll just focus on music. If you have a certain ability, it's interesting the different entry points that people have. I was always a musician. All of us studied music, and I think we all had a penchant for music. My particular gateway, like, there's a moment in your life where you go, wait, what? People will
pay me for this?
Yes.
That, that happens for a variety of different places because you usually just defer to the most familiar version of that. It's like, I'll be an artist. I'll be like, I guess I got to try and be a rock star or something like this. You don't know these kind of like subsets of things that can utilize your abilities and can, you know, make a living. For me, mine, Ryan, and we'll get into this later, was I was played in bands and I liked music and I was on the acting trail. But the thing that I went, oh shit, I guess I can do this, is when I started writing songs for like musical theater. And I was like, oh, like what? People like, I don't, this was not a thing that I was kind of just kidding around. But if you're going to let me do this, and that kind of fell into all this other stuff. And SC Free, I mean, it was, again, for you, it was just like a family band. And all of a sudden someone says, hey, do you guys actually want to do this and make a record? It's I like that. I would have never pinned that. But for you, it was just like doing ads. And then now here you are, like hit record producer, songwriter.
I think we talked about this at Adam at the Christmas party a few years ago. The only scholarship that I got in college was for acting. So I was actually...
That's why you're here on this show.
I had a full ride to Manhattan Marymount, which is a very theater-focused, New York Broadway-focused school. And all I wanted to be was an actor growing up. I would memorize sides in the mirror back to myself starting at age 10 up through my teenage years. And I did TV commercials and theater and you name it. And the reason I ended up going into music instead of acting was at age 19.
I know where the story is going. I was going to ask you to tell this, and SC, your mind's about to be blown.
Wait, what happened?
Listeners who follow us on the show, Ryan, take your time, really get into this one, because I don't know how often you've told this story, but I would like to capture it from every angle right now.
I have not told this story on a podcast. I don't think I've ever told this story in an interview to my knowledge, but here's what I did. I was, you know, going up, probably like you, Darren, like once I realized I could sing and act, it's like any role I wanted in a local high school, college theater thing, I was getting it. But that's Tulsa, right? I was in Oklahoma City. So I was like, I have to get out of Oklahoma. Nothing is happening here. So I loved music and acting equally. I mean, it was literally 50-50. And I thought, I'm literally going to throw it up into the hands of the Almighty and let fate, God, and everything in between pick my path in life. I applied to 5 different film studios and 5 different record labels for an internship. But here's how I did it. And this is the interesting part. In the year 2000, you couldn't just get on the internet and find the number for Columbia Records.
Right.
You couldn't get a hold of a film studio. You couldn't get a hold of anybody, especially in Oklahoma. So what I discovered by sheer accident one day, I'm holding a DVD. And I flip it over, questions, comments, complaints, 1-800, call 1-800, it was Universal Pictures, call 1-800, da-da-da-da, complaint hotline. And I was like, huh. So I just, no one ever calls that number, ever. So I'm complaining that I hate Forrest Gump. I'm so mad I bought it. Like, like nobody does that.
Said no one ever.
So I call the complaint hotline on the back of one of my DVDs. And I get routed to Universal Pictures, you know, Universal Complaint, and a real person answers. And I go, oh, and I don't know how I thought of this, but out of nowhere, I just go, oh, I'm sorry. I was actually on hold with human resources, and I think I got repatched to the wrong number. And she goes, oh, HR? I go, yeah, HR department. She goes, oh, 1 second, hold. Boom, connects me. All of a sudden, I'm on the phone with the HR secretary.
No way.
And I go, and I just go, I'm sitting here, I'm sweating even telling the story. And I go, I'm sorry, I was on hold with the head of HR. And the secretary goes, oh, I'm sorry. You know what? She's on the other line. Are you okay to hold? Sure, I'm okay to hold.
Whoa.
2 minutes later, I'm on the phone with the head of human resources for like Universal Pictures. And... And she goes, hi, this is Sharon. How can I help you? I go, hi, we've never met. My name is Ryan Tedder. I'm a college student, advertising major. I am an actor, and I just want an internship. I want to work for free. I'll do anything you want. I just want to work for Universal Pictures. And she goes, how did you get this number? When I told her the story, she died laughing. She goes, that alone is worth an internship. She goes, I'm going to connect you with the person who runs interns. So then I did that with Virgin Records, Columbia Records, like Interscope. I ended up doing the complaint hotline thing across the panel. It worked probably 50% of the time. I ended up with the right person. I applied for all the internships. And the only reason I ended up going into music and not acting was Universal ends up giving me an internship. They call me and I'm in LA for spring break. I was the guy that would come out to LA in spring break and just walk around hoping that I'd get noticed or somebody would be like, you should be on television. You're like,
yep,
I literally did that shit because I did that in New York one spring and I got flagged and put on TRL as a co-host randomly my sophomore year of college. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, I've got that face. I'm just going to, it's going to happen. So long story short is I get a call. I visit DreamWorks LA, which is Universal. I end up visiting DreamWorks. They go, we're going to find you an internship. Someone will call you in the next week. I end up getting a phone call from a 615 number. And 615, I don't even know what area code that is. Turns out it's Nashville.
Yeah.
I got kicked all the way down the food chain from DreamWorks, Universal Pictures to DreamWorks Pictures to DreamWorks record label, which was Rufus Wainwright, The Eels, Nelly Furtado. I end up getting punted to the Nashville Country Publishing Division of DreamWorks, and that became my internship. And so I literally took it as a sign from God, you're supposed to go into songwriting and music. And that's how I ended up where I am now. As opposed to being Darren or one of his peers, I ended up in music. And then my whole job that summer was combing through every song that was written by all their songwriters in DreamWorks Publishing and trying to find hit records that they might have missed that I could pitch and like bring up to the surface. And to put a timestamp on this time period, it was the summer that Baby, I'm Amazed by You, that Lone Star record. That was the summer that I was interning at DreamWorks, and the rest is history.
Wow, that was not the story I thought you were going to tell, and I want our listeners to know just how agog, Essie and I are. Our mouths are just like glued to the floor. That's got to be one of like a zillion stories I know you have. So like, just that's one. That's just one. We got more to go.
That's one. That's one.
That's so inspiring, man. And I also,
I'm like still so mind blown right now.
I know, because you're just like,
what are the odds? What are the odds?
Well, I'll tell you what they are.
I've thought about that. No clue.
You were fucking proactive. You were proactive and you were ruthless. And the worst thing that could have happened was someone say no. And then you move on. You try it again.
Yep.
Like this,
yep.
There's so much to be derived from this that I think speaks so much more of your
tenacity.
Your drive and your what's the word I'm looking for? I don't want to say scrappiness, but...
I'm just a dog on a bone, man.
Yeah, I mean, you're resourceful.
I'm a squirrel trying to get a nut.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
I thought you were going to tell the story about just while we're in story time with Ryan Tedder.
Well, let's hear it, because if you hint it to me, then I'll quickly tell it.
Well, let's just say there's a connection between you, me, and Matt Morrison of Glee fame.
Okay.
That is sort of Essie talks about sliding doors moments a lot on this show, about that moment where you could have done one thing but you did another. And this is a story when we finally met. You're like, I've been wanting to tell the story for a long time.
Yes.
And I don't know if this is out there, but this is a story that the listeners would love. And it's also very similar to the story that you just said, which is one of these very pivotal moments where you had something in you, you had an opportunity, and you know, just by divine providence mixed with your own sense of, keeping your doors open, shit, some amazing shit happens. So, Essie, you know Matt Morrison, right? He played Mr. Schuster on Glee.
Of course.
Wonderful actor, singer, everything. Ryan, indulge us. Tell us, how do we know Matt Morrison?
Wait,
this story
tell me,
is crazy.
Tell me.
This is crazy. So it is connected directly to the story I just told you about ending up at DreamWorks publishing Nashville. So okay. I end up in Nashville, summer of 2000. I'm writing original songs at this time. This is June. Between June and August, I record a few demos, and then I apply for a job at Planet Hollywood to wait tables because I'm broke. I'm sleeping on a couch. And the third day, final day of training, I show up, and there's a sign that says, auditioning here tomorrow, Sunday. Lance Bass from NSYNC. NSYNC was in town playing the stadium, by the way. This is the celebrity, their final big tour with like Dirty Pop and all that stuff. They were playing the stadium. Cisco was opening and Pink. And so the audition is on a Sunday, and it said, we're auditioning for a record deal. Win the chance to be on TRL and audition live on TRL to win a record deal.
This is what you were talking about earlier, right? Your thing on TRL?
Yes, sponsored by NSYNC.
Lance Bass was on our show just a few weeks ago, so I'm just tying it all to the thing. So I know that, okay, don't let me stop you.
Love me some Lance Bass. Love Lance Bass. So Lance technically discovered me. Lance and Timbaland. So 2 months into my summer tenure in Nashville doing, and I'm not a big country music guy. I've written a couple country hits, but I don't do a ton of country music. So I'm sitting here cataloging country music. I'm writing pop music. I go and audition. I'm standing there with the manager of Planet Hollywood. I read the sign. I go, wait a minute. This is tomorrow? He goes, yeah, this is tomorrow. I go, I'm doing this. I have to enter it. I have three original songs. He goes, Planet Hollywood employees are not valid. You cannot do this if you work here. I said, are you serious? He goes, I'm serious. And I go, dude, I take off my apron, hand it to him. I go, I quit.
No.
He goes, are you fucking with me? He got so mad. I go, bro, I didn't move here to be a waiter at Planet Hollywood. Peace. And I left, quit Planet Hollywood. Next day I audition. I get written up in the Nashville newspaper. I win the Nashville round. It was like seven cities. I get flown to TRL 2 weeks later. I perform an original song on MTV, on TRL, and I win. I win all the online votes came, 50% online votes, 50% voting from Pink, Brian McKnight, NSYNC. I win that thing. That night, this ties into Matt Morrison. I go out. I get invited to go out in a limo to a club I'd never been to. And I'm going to a Christian college in Tulsa at this time.
Oh, my God.
And I open the limo. I'm at the Trump Plaza Hotel, blah, blah, blah. I open the limo door. It's Lance Bass, Justin Timberlake, Derek Jeter, Miss Universe from India. She had just won Miss Universe the week before. And then two other guys who became my lifelong friends, all in this limo. We go to the club. P. Diddy's there, popping champagne. I'm sitting I'm sitting in between Miss Universe and Justin Timberlake.
21,
I'm 20. 20. I'm losing my mind. I'm 20 years old, losing my mind. So Justin and I became friends that night. We like exchanged numbers, and he's like, if you ever need any advice, any help, he's like, yo, if you ever need anything, yo, just hit me up. Seriously. It's all good, bro. It's all good, bro. Like, I know where you've been. I felt it. So just hit me up. So
that was very, very, very good.
Spot
Justin.
Spot on.
Yeah, I can do some JT. So I go back to my university the next day in Tulsa. 9 months later, I graduate by the skin of my teeth. That week, I get a phone call from a guy in New York City, works for Atlantic Records, say, hey, you're the kid that won that deal on MTV last summer, right? I go, yeah. What do you think about joining a band? And I say on the phone, I go, oh, that's interesting. Where is it? Well, we're signed to Atlantic Records. And I go, it's not a boy band. You said band, right? Not a boy band. He goes, no, it's a band. Sure, I'm game. I get on a plane. I fly to New York. I move into this four-story brownstone in Hoboken, New Jersey. Okay. Fully paid for by Atlantic Records. I'm living like high on the hog at this point. And I sit down. The first day I'm there, I'm playing some songs with these guys. I'm looking at them. I'm going, man, these guys are really good looking to be just a random band. No one has told me yet that it's a boy band. No one. Like flat out lied to me.
Oh my God.
Flat out lied to me. So I get a weekend to hanging out with them. We're just working on arrangements. They're like, can you help us write songs and do vocal arrangements? Sure. So I'm doing all this. We're in the studio with some hip hop producers. Then finally comes the day where they go, hey, we have a rehearsal tomorrow at this thing in Manhattan. You need to join. Okay. I show up. Everyone's wearing sweats and it's a dance rehearsal. All the blood leaves my face and I'm sitting here going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I leave that rehearsal that day. I go through with it, leave the rehearsal, go to hang out with Justin in the studio. He's working on JT. He's working on like that.
Justified. He's working on Justified.
Okay.
And I go in and I go, bro, it's a boy band. It's an Atlantic Records boy band. They want me to be in. And he's like, dude, that wave's almost done, bro. I wouldn't even think about it. He's like, yo, just use the time to be in New York and meet some people and then peace out. Go, you're a solo artist or start your own band, but don't do the boy band thing. That day, I go back to my four-story brownstone. My mom shipped all my shit to that place. Oh, I had moved
God.
In.
Oh my
I've been
God.
There. I've been there 2 weeks at this point. And this, I walk into my room and there's a guy standing in the room and I'm feeling really weird about this whole situation. I'm going, man, I shouldn't be here. This isn't the right thing for me. I open my room and there's someone in my room, curly blonde hair, and it's Matthew Morrison. And he goes, hey, dude. And he had like a very not amused look on his face. And there, our roommates at the time had been talking shit about their ex-roommate who just bailed on them to go do a Broadway thing. Little did I know he landed, I think it was Hairspray or Grease that he had landed a major role in.
It might have been Hairspray, yeah.
And he pulls me aside. This is way before he was Matthew Morrison, right? And he pulls me aside and he shuts the door and he goes, I just need you to know what you're getting into. Like, I wish you the best, but bro, I think you're on the Titanic. And he's like, I wish maybe you can turn it around. Maybe you can make something. You know, I hear you're talented, but he's like, I said, why, if you don't mind me asking, why are you quitting? He's like, because it's just like, he's like, the management is screwed up. He's like, the manager is absolutely a bad news. He gave me a bunch of lists. By the way, the manager at the time got federally indicted 5 years later and went to prison.
Oh, whoa. My God.
Yeah. AJ Descala. So that was our manager. And then Matt tells me, basically gives me this warning. You should strongly reconsider what you're about to do. He's like, enjoy the room. He's like, and he packs up all his shit and he like shakes my hand. And he's like, good luck, brother. And I ask him, I go, by the way, what's your gig? What are you doing? He goes, oh, I just landed this gig on Broadway. I'm like one of the leads in Grease or Hairspray, whatever it was. And he's like, you know, I'm a theater geek, whatever. And then like walks out. And that was my intro to Matthew Moore. And then I watch Glee, episode one, season one. I'm sitting here going, I know this guy. How do I know this guy?
Because he packed up, left, and followed his dreams.
I get on the internet. I Google Glee. I look at his name. I look his name up and realize that he was formerly in this boy band that I was almost in. And all of a sudden, that was it. That closes the circuit now on Matthew Morrison.
Yeah, that was the full sliding doors moment. And also the fact that not only did he say it was the Titanic, but he himself, it wasn't like he was in the band and was like, I don't know about this, I'm going to stick around, but you should go. He's like, I am leaving to pursue the thing that I came here to do. I'm a theater geek. I love this thing. I'm going to go pursue it. I just booked this thing. Peace. Like, it was like advice in action. It wasn't just like this random guy, I don't know about this.
Yep.
Like he was an echo of a version of you. Yeah, exactly.
He was looking
him
out for
leaving,
you.
I was looking at a version of myself when I saw him. And I'm also like, weird. The curly blonde haired guy. And then like I come in, I'm curly blonde haired guy. And I was like, I remember that meeting with him so distinctly because the tone of his conversation was so foreboding and so ominous. That I was like, who walks away? We were getting $2,500 a month stipend just for being in the band. $2,500 at age 20? Huge.
Yeah, huge.
That's a lot of money.
Huge.
Yes.
Huge.
It was crazy. Crazy.
No, but you had to take a chance on yourself is what it sounds like. You had to be like, I'm betting on myself.
Yep. I'm betting on myself. It's a small world. By the way, I almost, side note, I almost T-boned Rostam yesterday.
Oh, no.
I was in Silver Lake at a lunch and I'm like going down this crazy narrow driveway and I think it's in a Tesla, just pulls right in front of me and just stops and looks right at me, doesn't realize it's me.
No.
And then like basically like, don't hit me, motherfucker, and then just like keeps going. Yeah, anyway,
you're
small
like,
world.
I know you.
I know
oh,
you.
Dude,
that's
I know
some, that's
you.
That's some serious LA
that's
shit.
That's some LA shit.
That's some LA shit.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Also, how do you like Silver Lake, huh?
Well, I don't live there, but I love going there. My bass player lives on one end there, so there's the crazy Lautner house that's on the hilltop in Silver Lake. So that's where I was yesterday. That's my friend's house. And so I was having lunch there and my bass player lives on the exact opposing top of the opposing hill. And he has a bunch of studios there. So I love
going
to Silver Lake. Eleni Oyster, my friend owns that spot. That's one of my favorite restaurants, Bar Covell.
I do love Eleni. Gosh.
It's great. It's great. The guy that I was a theater geek with in Oklahoma, Dustin Lancaster, who moved here and became an actor for a while, he's the guy that started Eleni. So it's a weird small...
Oh, perfect segue. Let's talk about your theater background, because one of the things about a lot of the multi-hyphenates that we have on this show, there always seems to be this through line of theater. I think that has a lot to do with the edge, you know, when you grow up, that, you know, it's the thing that can kind of service a lot of the different interests, whether you're a performer or you just like to sing or whatever. We've talked about this a little bit, Ryan, but, you know, Essie's also a theater geek. And when we met, I know you talked about, like, you came up doing that. You grew up, you grew up in the church, right?
Very much so.
Which I think is theater adjacent. I think it's performative, it's theatrical. It really is. There's a huge through line of people.
Theater adjacent.
It totally is. There is rehearsal, there is, you know, I'm not trying to take away from any of the dogma. You're doing the damn thing every week or more than once a week.
Yeah.
And I think there's a large number of musicians that come from the church simply because, guess what? You're going to perform and play your instrument once a week for, like, I don't know, 18 years or whatever it is. You know, so it clocks in a lot of time. So I'm curious, did you grow up doing theater, or was it just something you always loved? Did you do it in school, or, like, what was your, like, how do we not see Ryan Tedder on Broadway right now? How come you didn't go with Matthew Morrison to Broadway?
To be completely candid, I would do Broadway tomorrow in a heartbeat. If it didn't disrupt our whole family and school and all those things, in 5 seconds, I would do Broadway tomorrow. To me, theater is the greatest theater. And I would say, look, I love concerts. I love that. So what I do is similar to that. But the amount of things that can go wrong on any given night on Broadway or in live theater, it is the most peak existence, level existence for me as a human being. It is scary. It is fulfilling. It is, every night's a different temperature. Certain lines, certain jokes land different ways on different nights. All the intricacies that our theater, I love. Church is very similar. I did grow up, I was extremely involved in church. I went basically 4 times a week. So Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, and then we hosted a home group usually once a night. So my family is very evangelical, Pentecostal, and I went to a Christian college. So I was very much, it is theater adjacent. You are absolutely right. And that informed me, look, we all did our 10,000 hours, probably 3,000 of them, if not more, came from me theater. And by way of church, the first play I ever did was Joseph, you know. And
were you Joseph?
I was not Joseph. No, because this is before I cracked my coming out of my shyness bubble. Because what you found, what I'm sure you realize, a lot of famous actors, performers, I just listened to a podcast, was listening to Smartless the other day, and Zach Galifianakis, his episode, where he talks about the fact that, like, I am an absolute introvert. I everything you see on camera when I host SNL or if I'm in The Hangover is the antithesis of who I really am. That was me as a child. It took me, like, years, probably until I was 13, 14, before I finally could step onto stage and be like, this is me. This is my character. I'm going to own this. I'm going to crush this. And the only reason that I didn't do Broadway and go into acting again was applying for the internships. I wanted to be great at one of the things and not decent at both of the things. And so I figured I got to master one of these first, and whichever way fate or God steers me, that's the direction that I'm absolutely going to go. But theater and comedy, stand-up comics, those are the two bravest forms of expression, in my opinion. And
agreed.
And just, I going to Broadway, going to live theater, I can't really think of anything else that I enjoy more than going to Broadway or West End.
Can I tell you, I think you're going to have a musical of all of your hits. I think that's going to be, like, your third act. I can see that
amazing
in your future. You, like, the Bruce Springsteen of it all. That's what I see for you, Mr. Ryan Tedder. I think if you love Broadway so much, I mean, all this, with all the songs that you've written and all the number ones that you've had, why wouldn't you just like make a musical?
Yeah, whether you like it or not, someone's going to take your catalog. I feel like people have already used your songs in shows anyway, that it's like there's already enough jukebox shit. But also as a songwriter, I feel like your own original shit, I'm sure someone's going to want to develop. I'm sure I'm hitting something. There's no way in the past 20-something odd years you haven't been approached by at least three people that were like, yes, hey, let's develop this thing together.
I
know this must have happened.
Yeah, well, Justin Paul and I have been talking for the last 18 months about it. Greg Wells, who just did In the Heights and also did The Greatest Showman and is doing everything now. Greg Wells and I.
For our listeners, that's Justin Paul of Pasek and Paul, my Michigan homies, who we shout out a lot on this show.
A lot.
Because those are some old pals of mine.
There is 100% a world where that happens. 100%. And for the first time, like Greg and I sat down 3 weeks ago and said, let's get through the next month or two and then we're breaking bread and we're actually going to come up with a plan because we want to do it. And I absolutely want to do it. And for me, whether it's starts in film and can be adapted to theater or vice versa,
right,
we've been debating that. Ironically, or maybe not, that's not the right word. I would say logistically, when you look at how hard it is in the success rate of Broadway shows, it is actually easier to develop a film where you know the end game is Broadway. That is actually easier to achieve. So I think that would, I'm executive producing two films right now. I'm doing a musical with Margot Robbie called El Beso for Netflix. And then I'm doing a film with CJ Entertainment, who did Parasite. And it's a music, it's an LA, South Korea, back and forth, again, music related feature. Somewhere in that world is where I think I might be able to cross into Broadway. But that to me just seems like the easier route to go.
I think I'm putting on my marketing like managerial hat. But yeah, I see that for you. I think that would be incredible. Like Darren said, I love the theater and I love musical theater. But I'm with you in that I think that there is nothing more exhilarating than stepping out on a stage where anything can happen. Anything can go wrong. Anything can go great. But you are literally standing in front of an audience of people who don't know you and you have to entertain them. And that's to me like the most like talk about like being I'm such an adrenaline junkie. I think that's why it makes me so happy.
Yep.
Because it's such a dialectical relationship that you have with these people that you don't know.
It's peak living.
It really is. It really, really is. So I'm assuming that it wouldn't be logistically possible for you because you have kids.
It's difficult. Yes.
It would be difficult.
Correct. It'd be difficult. Like,
so like when the kids are like waving goodbye, when they're like on their way to college, when they're like, yeah, Dad, I love you. Daddy's got to go to Broadway. So I guess I 100% can see that in your future. I think that would be really cool.
There are some trips. And Darren, I think we talked about this once. Like, I think we talked about this actually for sure. My wife and I, were it not for having a family, would be bouncing between LA, New York, and Paris, and probably Tokyo, like just around the year. Like we would literally just like three months. I feel like I've won the lottery because of being in a touring band. I get to see the world, but then come back home to sunny Southern California, which is still dreamland for me. Coming from the Midwest, California will always be dreamland for me.
Of course.
But yeah, there's certain compromises you make. And for me, like, yeah, not living in New York and doing Broadway, even though every single time I talk about it, I'm like, I would do it tomorrow. Like, that is a trade-off. You can't have everything, have your cake and eat it too 24/7, as much as we all want to.
Well, totally. You said something that I really liked, which is something that I think a lot of people who cross-pollinate between a lot of stuff, and I certainly am guilty of this, something that I struggle with is, you know, when you have a lot of interests and you're pretty good at them, you really do, like I often, you know, will spread myself too thin and I always have all these different plates spinning that inevitably one of them there's a price to pay because one will be neglected. So like I dove in really hard to on the acting thing. And so, yeah, maybe I didn't put out as many records as I hoped to by a certain age. But then again, I had a lot of, you know, like you said something that I really liked, which was I wanted to be really good at one of the two things, you know, to justify, you know, putting all this time into it as opposed to being just sort of like okay at a lot of them, jack of all trades, master of none. And
correct.
I think you've managed to do that. Yeah, like I think by nature of our love of everything and finding stuff interesting and trying to add a part of ourselves to it, like there's always going to be stuff that you haven't done that you're like, yeah, but wouldn't it be cool if I just did this? Which is sort of the nature of the beast. So in your case, like, yeah, you have smashed a wonderful career, but there's always going to be that, yeah, but you know, I'd be in Tokyo right now.
100%.
I'd be living in a, you know, fucking cool ass situation in Paris right now. But it's like, you know, you got that other stuff. So I know you're happy with your life. Not like I'm here to like lift you up or anything, but yeah, one must be pretty proud of the other things, the other plates.
When I was a child. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm guilty if nothing else of spinning too many plates, music and then other companies outside of music and all this other stuff. When I was a kid.
Yeah, we're not even getting into all this other stuff that you do. Jesus, there's so many other things.
This summarizes at least my ethos in life in general. Obviously, you know, the Carpe Diem, you know, the famous, you know, Robin Williams quote from Dead Poets Society. That, funny enough, that phrase, that movie came out at a seminal point in my life. And Robin, what he was preaching in Dead Poets Society, like, hammered me. I watched that movie 6 or 7 times because I was like, he is talking to me in this film. Like, seize the day. Like, don't put it off. Don't talk about what you want to do. Do it. The other parable that struck me as a kid was The Boy Who Cried Wolf. Like, anyone that knew me, I was determined in high school, middle school, and college. If you heard me talk about something, if I brought something up at the lunch table, right, or whatever with my friends, and you heard me say something repeatedly about what my interest was or what I was going to do, I would have killed myself to do it just to prove that I wasn't just bullshitting you and that I actually had intent. And when I got asked when I was a kid, I was like 10 years old, and I got asked, if you found the genie in the bottle and you had one wish. My mom asked me this question, actually. What would you wish for? If you could ask God for anything, right? What would you wish for? My answer was immediate. 3 lives. And she said, why? I said, because it will take 3 lives to do what I want to do in 1 life. And I need 3 lives. So that's my only wish is 3 lives.
Damn.
So you had to choose one. 1 life.
Yeah.
one Republic.
One Republic. One.
That was terrible. That wasn't even a joke. I don't even know what I was trying to pull off with that one. That was just that was lazy.
It was I enjoyed it. I think it was like an A minus B plus.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know what category I'm in, but I'll take it. At least I passed.
We're grading on a curve.
Had you seen Aladdin? Had you seen Aladdin before then? Because you know in Aladdin, one of the rules is that you can't ask for more wishes.
Yep.
Yeah. But you never said you couldn't ask for more lives. So that's a great loophole.
Lives.
Yes.
Oh, I remember the adjective. It's shrewd. It's being shrewd and being clever with the rules. Asking for more lives is just like calling the fucking complaint hotline. It's just seeing a whole, like a route and then like knowing how to fucking get through it and being super resourceful. I mean, that is so indicative of so many other things that I think make you successful, Ryan, because I think behind every, there's this sort of like, outer skill that people see. I talk about this with Ben Chapasic all the time. And I think, I think on our good days, we would have this. I'm not saying we're all prolific at it, but at our best, we've definitely done this. And I think a lot of people that we admire have done this too. I'm going to use a really nerdy metaphor here. So there's the skill on the outside. So like, they play bass, or he can write songs, or they're doing this thing. And you see that and you go, wow, that's the talent. That's actually the outermost shell, in the way that people who don't know comic books think that Wolverine's power is that he has claws come out of his fists. That's not Wolverine's superpower. Wolverine's superpower is that his body can heal itself at an extraordinary rate, which is why they put adamantium on his skeleton so he's in pain when he makes bones shoot out of his fucking fists, because he can withstand the absurdity of having a metal skeleton and his body is constantly healing itself. So the real skill is this other thing that is just behind the thing that you see in front of it. And that skill that I'm talking about, the healing skill for folks like yourself, is the hustle and having this insatiable and hopefully, you know, friendly and passionate, compassionate and considerate hustle that can kind of get you from the hotline to the summer internship. You know, like, these are just shrewd, resourceful, cunning things that you see a wall and you don't see the brick. I mean, you don't see a wall. You see the brick and the mortar, and you see how it can be rearranged. I mean, that's just a thing that I think has to drive a lot of artists and ambitious people. That I'm in awe and inspired by those stories, because that's what I see coming out of you, is not seeing what's in front of you, but how it can be rearranged.
Life hacks.
You know.
Well, I think just like seeing the path, I think is what kind of separates people that end up having careers in music and those that find it more difficult to find work, is that you really have to kind of zig and zag, you know?
Yeah.
And you have to kind of roll with the punches.
Hustle, man.
And that's, but, and they don't ever really tell you that. They just say like, you know, you need a network. Networking. It's not necessarily
it's just that,
because you can meet someone and great, awesome. But you have to, it's more about you know, being in the community and like going to the shows and telling people like, listen,
yeah,
I play bass. I do this.
Like with Haim, I'm sure, I know for sure with One Republic, being a successful artist is, I mean, my God, if you could go back in time, and it is definitely not the most robust business plan, no matter how talented one might be. If coming out of high school and deciding I'm going to go into music and make a great living, it's crazy at best. But my overarching philosophy, and I know I've met a lot of other artists, successful artists that feel the same. My overarching philosophy was, I only have plan A. I didn't believe in plan Bs. And I'll tell people all the time when they ask me for advice, I say, I could do this or I could. I said, no, you lost me at or. It's I'm doing this. This is going to happen. I'm going to make this happen. Because the moment you have a plan B, right? Plan B is if shit goes sideways and the world's ending, you'll figure it out like everybody else. But if you have the backdoor exit already mapped out, when you're going towards plan A, the moment it gets too difficult, you are running for that exit. And so for me, I moved out here and I was determined, I'm making it in music, whatever shape that is. If I end up doing film and TV music, if I would ever successful artist, I'm making a living in music, period. There is no plan B, right? There is no plan B. And I found that to be central to a lot of people that have made it in film, TV, music, and otherwise, because you have to get so used to the word no. And if you don't have thick skin or believe that, okay, 1,000 no's might equal one yes, and that one yes is the only yes that I need. And, you know, I won't say who it is now because he's a high ranking executive, but like I had a very successful executive look me in my face when we played the Derby. We played every club up and down the Sunset Strip. We used to pay to play, because if you didn't sell 50 tickets, you had to pay the promoter. You did that. So I played the Viper Room probably 14 times, the Roxy 5 times, Troubadour 10 times. Anyway, up and down the California coast, Chain Reaction to the gig, to you name it. And I remember playing the Derby one time, and I had a guy walk up to me and tell me straight up, he said, you're a decent writer. You're not a front man. And I just don't think your band, I'm sorry, bro. I just don't think your band will ever make it. And like we were performing at the time, I was playing Apologize like in our concerts, which I think probably 9 months later that it was the number one song in the world. And the next time I saw that guy, I wasn't an ass about it, but I just reminded him, I said, am I still not a front man? And that was like 6 or 7 years later. I was like, do I need to reapply for the gig? Like, what's your opinion now, bro?
Like, sucks not to be a successful band, you know? Really, really, really took a lot out of me.
It really sucks. But I think that ultimately, my ethos to this day is, I walk into any room, whether it's writing, music, business, or otherwise, start by the assumption that everyone in the room is of equal ability and talent, even if they're not. If you start from there, then the only thing you control is how much harder you work, how many more hours you put in. And so dropping into LA, I was just like, man, everyone here is mad talented. There's no guarantee for me, but I'll tell you what I can do. I will outwork every single person here to the bone. And that was the only difference maker that I knew I could control. I couldn't control anything else.
We don't have too much more time left, but I wanted to Just really quick, both of you guys had canceled tours, unfortunately, because of the pandemic, and I know you were about to take...
Yes.
Congratulations on the new record, by the way. Human sounds great.
Thank you.
Human just released a couple months
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, a month and a half. Yeah, I don't even... Who's counting time anymore?
What
I know, right?
Time?
It could be a week, it could be whatever, but recent... It was the 2021 release of the newest
exactly.
Sonoma
Public Correct.
Record, and
Correct.
You guys were going to go on the road with that. And SD just started playing shows again a little bit, but still, both of you guys had records you put out that you can't fucking tour.
And
talk about theater, man. I mean, do you feel that theatrical itch that, because Essie and I talk about this all the time, but you know, that is theater, that is performative. I mean, do you really get to scratch that itch when you're on tour, or do you feel like it's still like, yeah, but I really would rather be doing Rodgers and Hammerstein?
I get to scratch the itch. I don't get to scratch the acting itch that will forever always be there. But if you ever come to Warner Public Show, I spend 20 minutes of the show riffing on the audience. I'm like, literally, I turn into a comedy hour, and I'm like, just like pointing people out in the audience and just kind of going nuts.
Yeah, I get to test your comedy routines out. Both of you are comedians, so I
do it every single night.
Get your type five together.
100%. And I get to do that. So I do get to flex it a little bit. The cancellations has been a nightmare. I'm supposed to be in Portugal today performing, headlining a festival. But at the last minute, the Portuguese government told the promoter, 3 days before they started setting up the rigging, you need to charge every attendee €25 at the gate for a rapid test on top of the tickets and top of the travel. And they waited until the last day to tell the promoter. The promoter's like, I'm not doing that. That's robbery. It's wrong. It's unethical. I can't do that. And so the government was like, you have to. And he said, well, I'm going to pull the plug. And you're going to miss out on a lot of taxes and a lot of – and they pulled the plug. And you know, Esty, I know you understand this as much as I do. When you're booking a lean and mean, say, 2 or 3 week run in Asia or Europe, you have one or two anchor dates, right? That are, let's say, paying you significantly more than the other dates. If you lose one or two of those, the whole tour deflates.
Then you're in the hole.
Then you're in the hole. You're literally in the hole.
You're in the hole. And I'll tell this because we have a lot of upset fans in Spain. We were supposed to play Sevilla and Madrid and Budapest. And so hopefully some of these fans listen to this podcast. But like doing that tour went from us making barely anything, like, and I mean barely a dollar, to we were going to have to pay almost $500,000 to just to play.
We were going to
lose $500,000 to play. And so we had to pull the plug because like we can't operate a business that way, and it sucks. I mean, we have an arena tour in the spring in Europe that is thankfully sold really well. We're still doing it. Please God, let there not be another variant on this crazy disease.
I know.
I don't know what to say. It's been a disaster for 2 years for musicians.
I'm so sorry.
I'm glad you had time for us.
Though. I'm
same.
Yeah, same. I know. Selfishly, but no, I feel you. I'd like to think that your fans also understand that these are the craziest of times.
Yeah.
And we will eventually reach a sense of normalcy. But at this point in 2021, it's like nothing. It feels like nothing is promised. Day to day, things are changing. And like I hear from our agents and our management, it's like no one knows anything. And if they say they know what's going to happen in the next 5 months,
they have no
clue. That's the boy that cried wolf.
That is. And a lot of these shows, I talk with Live Nation a lot. I mean, every tour for the most part, with the exception of Dave Matthews, because he is absolutely bulletproof on touring.
Yeah.
With the exception of Dave, every other tour is soft, meaning underselling drastically what was expected. You know, we did two nights in Vegas at the Zappos Theater 2 weeks ago. Up until the day of show, we were only at 65% sold. I was panicking. I was like, it's 4,000 or 5,000 people in Vegas. We could, like, if we can't sell that, we have a problem.
Easily.
The day of show, all the tickets blew out, and we found out from the promoter, everyone was waiting to see if we would cancel.
Actually show up.
Actually
100%.
Show up. Yeah.
And I get that. Listen, that's a lot of money to lose. You're paying for a ticket, and you can't, you're not, there's all this red tape with being reimbursed and everything. Like, that's money that people need for bills and food and, like, to keep their lights on. Like, I understand 100%.
It's also going to be – it's more expensive. It's also more expensive now, as you know, for artists. I mean, my manager was just like, Ryan, just know that for the next year or two until COVID is completely eradicated, like our costs from the COVID, having to pay for all the COVID protocols at every venue has corroded the profit of touring. It's eaten into a big chunk of what was there. It's a cost that we have to front. And it is what it is though. At this point, I'm so excited to be on the road. I was already booking restaurants in Portugal and Germany and Paris.
Oh my God.
I was already booking restaurants.
I want to go on tour with Ryan Tedder. That sounds like a blast. We'd have a blast, man. That's I know.
We would have a lot of fun. Wow. Trust me, we have fun. C'est la vie.
We'll get back to it soon enough. I'm going to leave you with one more question, man. Because this is something that we like to get to the heart of that thing I do with all of our guests. It's kind of a two-part question. You can try and put it in one, but one of the two things I want to say, well, first of all, just a career-wise, you know, we were talking about all these things that you do, and we didn't even get into half the other shit that you're up to. I guess we kind of said it with theater, but I was going to say, you know, what's left? What's the next mountain to climb? And I will tie this to the main question of this whole podcast, which is what for you ties it all together? You know, like what is the thing according to you of like why you're doing this? You know, I talk about just to bring back the sort of if you come up from the church, you know, there's a vocation calling to it. Is it ego? Is it the self? Is it to, I don't know, to prove bullies wrong? Is it to connect human beings? What connects all of it for you, for Ryan Tedder? Because there's a lot of shit you do. And what's at the very, very center? What's at the nucleus? That if you can even try and like put that out there.
Yeah,
you said a lot of inspiring
shit.
Pin
it down.
What do you got? Enlighten us. Drop the mic on us.
I would say that I have started ascending what I would call the second. There's a book, you know, the two mountains. The first mountain that people ascend is you know, financial. It's rooted. You're running from fear and trying to conquer fear. You're trying to prove to yourself. It's driven by ego. It's driven by narcissism. All of us are inherent narcissists. To make it in entertainment for a period of time, you have to be a narcissist. Now, I say that with a caveat. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It doesn't mean you're not empathetic. It takes a certain level of focusing on your soul craft and drive to even begin to ascend the first mountain. If you reach the peak of the first mountain, some people choose to stay there. They need to remain relevant for eternity and win and beat other people and all that. The goal is to make it to the second mountain, which is, you know, how do I impact others? How do I actually leave this world, just cliche as it sounds, a better place than I found it? What ties it all together for me, and I think the objective of life in general, is taking the talents, abilities, or skill sets that are either inherited, not earned, but just, you know, God-given, inherited, or learned, executing them to the best, taking those talents and executing on them to the best of your ability, and finding a way in that execution that the offshoot of executing on your reality with your talent benefits not only yourself and your family, but the people in the world around you, and creates an echo effect. And I think that, you know, money is the byproduct of understanding your reality and executing on it to the best of your abilities. Chasing money is, I think, a fool's errand and not something that it's ever been an obsession of mine. But figuring out how you can use your talents to scratch your own personal drive and your own itch, but somehow impact others in a positive way, in whatever way, shape, or form, I think that is our purpose. And I think leaving that halo effect of, I did a song with Beyonce a few albums ago called I Was Here. And that song, the lyric encapsulates, like we all want to know at the end of the day, especially in entertainment, it's conquer fear, then create legacy. And how can we create legacy? And I don't mean put your name on a building on the UCLA campus. No offense to people who do that. That's phenomenal. But I mean, you leave this echo effect. And I think that creatives are endowed with the most natural ability to leave a legacy of any people on earth, because what we're creating and putting out into the universe is permanent, right? Music, film, and now with the blockchain, it really is permanent. It's forever, woo! Right? But I know that's a long-winded answer, but I think it's figuring out a way for your talent. Yeah, that's my answer.
I think that's an amazing answer.
And I think you've done that in spades, man. It's inspiring to hear it.
I think that rings true for most of us, right?
Definitely.
Is to like bring people together and create community and to make people not feel so alone.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's through music. 100%. Sometimes it's through a tight five. Sometimes it's through, you know, it's like you pick your weapon of choice to do those things. And I think you've done that fabulously, man. Dude, thank you for your time.
The last thing I'll say as an exclamation Please. Point on that thought, because it just occurred to me. This is profound. I talked to somebody before my grandparents passed away at their nursing home. They died within 45 minutes of each other, incidentally.
Oh.
But I asked one of the nurses, what is the most common conversation you have with people as they're approaching death? And what she said shouldn't surprise us, but it's the way I think in which people should live their life. She said, no one sits around and talks about at 95 knocking on death's door, like regretting all the things they did. She's like, you almost never hear that. What I hear consistently is overwhelming regret for all the things they didn't try. And I think that to me, if there's regret at the end of the day, it's the risk you didn't take, the person you didn't walk up and talk to because you were scared. And so it all comes back to just like, you live once, you're not promised another day, fucking do it.
You don't get the three, you get the one, but hey.
No. Yeah, you get the
one
three
out
lives.
Of three ain't bad.
That's it.
I think it's a different lyric. I think there's something to that.
That's really good advice.
I'm going to call Jim Steinman's estate and make sure I'm not stepping on anything. I don't know if legal is going to be mad at that. Dude, Ryan, thank you so much for your
I
time,
love that
man.
Advice.
Seriously, you're such a mensch, and we really appreciate
thank
you
so
out with
us, much
man.
For joining
thank
us.
Thank you, guys. This is a much needed fun sojourn in the middle
I'm
of
glad,
the week.
Man.
So thank you.
I hope I almost T-bone you somewhere in Silver Lake when
in
I'm
Silver
driving
Lake.
Around there as well.
I just want to have a T-bone steak with my... I want to be in Portugal having
or,
a T-bone
or that
steak
too.
Across from Rostam and Ryan Tedder and
or at
SD
least
Heim
some tapas.
Some torture. Tapas in Portugal. That sounds great.
Torture.
All right, man. Much love. Thank you so much for joining us, man.
Thank you so much.
See you guys. Thanks.
Bye.
That Thing I Do is a presentation of Cadence 13 Studios.
If you like the show, which I know you do, please be sure to like us, follow us, and leave a glowing review.
Thank you for listening to our show. We'll see you next time.